talking this afternoon with Frank Cerisi, one of the people behind the new coffee table book, Baseball Americana, Treasures from the Library of Congress. Good afternoon, Frank.
Good afternoon.
I see five names on the cover. There's Harry Katz, there's you, Phil Michel, Wilson McBee, and Susan Rayburn. Could you briefly describe what each of you did for this book?
Sure. I mean, it was a real team effort, as you can tell. Harry Katz is the former head of prints and photographs at the Library of Congress. And this was really my vision, along with Harry's, to get this book done. And Harry and I, along with Sue and Wilson mainly, did the writing. And Phil, Michelle, who also works at the Library of Congress, was our technocrat, who was able to get the images that we selected and get them properly scanned into the hands of the folks at HarperCollins, where they designed the book then, of course, edited it, and put it together for us.
And it is a marvelously designed book. It's very pretty. It's a pleasure to go through. How many baseball items are in the Library of Congress, would you say?
Oh, gosh, there's hundreds, if not thousands. There's hundreds of great images, ephemera, anything paper-related the library will have.
I was going to ask about that, because that differentiates you between, let's say, something like the Hall of Fame.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It has, the Library of Congress is the largest library with the most books and ephemera and photographs in the world.
Now, when you say ephemera, could you please describe what that means?
Yes, any periodical, magazine, anything in the written record, really. They're the mavens for that, and of course they've been collecting for a long, long time, and have an outstanding collection. And what it's not like going to your local library, Ron, where you can go into the Dewey Decimal System and look under baseball and, you know, see a couple of hundred items and then go find the books or magazines. There are literally departments for periodicals and newspapers. There's departments for prints and photographs. There's the rare book department. There's the general library. There's film. There's postcards. There's sheet music. There's anything where you can think of an image on some kind of something tactile, the Library of Congress will have at least a collection and sometimes an entire department on it. So what we did, and I was the only one who either currently isn't working there or hadn't at one time worked there, so we had the right people. We went to the departments, we went to the department heads, and we started talking about baseball. And, of course, even the department heads love the national pastime. So we were able to say, well, we're doing this book. Tell me some of the cool things you have. And that's where these treasures started then, Ron, coming to the fore.
I imagine with all those images there, it must be very difficult to make the selections.
That was the most difficult part of the book, because we came up, I can't remember exactly how many. There's, I think, between 300 and 400 images in the book. And we cut everything down to about 1,000. And the last cut was extremely difficult. And in fact, some of the things, we just left it up to HarperCollins, where they did the design. And we gave them, say, some examples of the comic books, you know, those very visual comic books that you saw. I think we've got Superman, and we've got one of the World War II era books and several others. And then they would pick from our selection. So we spent probably about two and a half years getting the items and writing as we got it. And anytime you write about baseball, as you know better than anybody, better than most people, Ron, it always ends up being some kind of a, it fits in nicely chronology. So we had a, we laid the book out, kind of chronological, and kind of went from there.
Now you're saying you gave some of the stuff to the HarperCollins people. You're happy with what they did with it?
You know, I had never been involved in a book of this magnitude before, so I went in with some trepidation because I am such a collector and love the old baseball and consider myself a little bit of a baseball historian. And I was keeping my fingers crossed that it would all turn out the way I kind of envisioned it in my head. And when I saw what they did then, Ron, I was 100% pleased. And in fact, I can objectively say, even though I've read just about every coffee table baseball book out there over the last decades, this one fits really, really nice. And in fact, you can have a part two or a part three. Because there's just so much, and visually, it is so interesting. So that's a long-winded way of answering your question and saying, yes, I was 100% pleased.
One of the things I noticed is that for the most part, it seems to end in the mid to late 1960s.
Yep. Into the 70s. Well, if you think of it, the Library of Congress, again, it's because of the... because of what it is, it generally takes a generation or at least a half a generation for them to get their collection of cool stuff from the past. So the past is generally about a generation or so.
And see here, I would think that they would like collect as you go.
Well, usually the collections, it's kind of like, you know, we're just now tapping into some of the Look magazine collection.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Look hasn't been around since the 70s. Now, the collections as they come in then, and these are massive collections, they're then cataloged. And that sometimes takes years to do. Because, again, think of what you're dealing with. You're not dealing with... anything like... Have you been there, Ron?
Unfortunately, I have not. I was in Washington for the Sabre Convention. After they made that tour.
Right. It's unlike anything you can imagine if you're one, as I am, to love to go into libraries, even little town libraries. I just love to do that because I love history, and especially anything having to do with baseball. There are two main buildings and they're housed, one of the main buildings, of course, is housed where the United States Supreme Court is. And as I said, they have the largest collection of books, prints, photographs, and ephemera in the world. So it is a labyrinth that takes some getting used to just to be able to access it.
Sure.
And if you were to go to lov.gov, which, by the way, has more monthly hits than any other website in the world, you will see that they've done a pretty darn good job of getting the stuff kind of out there via the World Wide Web. But that's a fraction of what they have and what's available for people to go when they want to do research.
Now, you mentioned this book took two and a half years to do,
yeah,
which is not a terribly long time for a book like this.
Right.
You also mentioned the possibility of doing follow-ups. Is that a real possibility?
We'll see. You know, I think it is a mammoth task, but yeah, I think other books are going to be delving into some of the separate collections, and I'll just give you a couple of examples that just kind of come to my mind. I can see a book on, they've got the Jackie Robinson papers, they've got the Branch Rickey papers. We barely got into those because so much of that wasn't visual, but it's informational. There's all the Look magazine, I think we have a chapter on it and several pictures. But, you know, you've got a couple of decades of wonderful baseball images from Look magazine. And, you know, and on and on and on. The cards, which we had a few of, they have a wonderful collection known as the Benjamin Edward Collection. And Benjamin Edward was kind of like a mini Jefferson Burdick. Do you know Jefferson Burdick?
No, I do not.
Okay, Jefferson Burdick is kind of the grandfather of tobacco cards, and his collection is up at the New York Metropolitan. And he collected when cards started in about the 1880s, he started collecting as a little boy, which would be in the 1920s, and amassed a giant collection that went in to the Met in about 1952. Well, someone akin to him was Benjamin Edwards, who coincidentally happened to be a neighbor of Carl Sandburg's. And when Sandburg was our poet laureate, he asked Sandburg, he said, you know, I would love to see these cards somewhere because I've got this great collection of tobacco cards that span from the 19th century up until the mid-1950s and even into the 60s. So Sandburg got he said, what about the Library of Congress? So Carl Sandburg actually was the link that we had to get the Benjamin Edwards collection. And there is tons on the website. You can see a lot of it. But there's even things that aren't on the website in terms of his collection.
It's interesting you say that because most images people have of cards is bubblegum cards, things mm-hmm. that kids collect, but
right.
in fact they started out as something that only adults could collect.
Well, that's exactly right, because the image of the baseball players from the 1880s, which was kind of the first wave, was used to sell product, basically, and the product was tobacco. And as the book shows, and as a lot of card collectors know, there was kind of the first wave was the 1880s, and then all of the great tobacco card sets that came out between 1909 and 1912, including the Wagner card and some of those cards, was pretty much the second wave of cards. And what you're referring to on bubblegum cards is kind of like what the baby boomers remember, and that's probably the third wave, you know, the 50s, 60s, into the early 70s. And, you know, since then, of course, cards have even exploded to where now there's no bubble gum, but there's a lot of cards out there.
Okay. George Will did the foreword for this book. Was it
right.
difficult to get him on board?
Not really, because he's a big friend of the Library of Congress. He's from Washington, D.C. He goes to the Washington Nationals games. In fact, I do too. And he sits close to where I sit. And he loves history and kind of appreciates the breadth and the scope of the LOC. So it was pretty much of an easy sell. Just as a little sidebar here, one of the sad things about the book is Tim Russert, who loves baseball as well, he sat close by where I sit at the Nationals games, and he had season tickets, and I told him about this book, and he was absolutely thrilled because he was just kind of learning what we have down at the Library of Congress, and even he was amazed. So, you know, even some of those men and women who we've kind of heard about, when they live in D.C., or they're here enough to where they kind of get into the culture, that's when you really appreciate something like the Library of Congress.
Is there a website dedicated to this book?
No, but loc.gov is, they have some of the images on the book right in their general website. And it, truthfully, I can't tell you exactly, I wish I could, Ron, so you could pass it on, exactly how to access that. But I think if people just look on the on the website, they can navigate their way and see some of these images and a lot of stuff that would have been in the book had we had the room.
Very good. We've been talking with Frank Cerisi, one of the people behind the gorgeous new book, Baseball Americana. Frank, thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Ron.